It was over 20 years ago that I came up and did a Rohak Sisishin. It was the first one after Katagiri died. And I have been practicing in Omaha, Nebraska. I had a farm just outside of town. But Katagiri was doing circuit rides in those days. And he would come down to Omaha pretty regularly, every 6 weeks or so. Here he'd come through and lead a sesshin. And so from 83 until he was starting to get sick, I think in 87 or 8, somewhere around there. And then Tejo Munich, another Dharma aunt of mine, came and led retreats on a regular basis. And when she couldn't come one time, then Nonin came down and led a retreat. And when that happened, I sold my farm and moved to Hokkyoji. And I just, in there, though, was that Rohatsu Sushin. And he had suggested I sit with Dokai for that 7 days. And I went to San Francisco Zen Center for a training period and then went up. Nonin then moved from Hokkyoji down to over Nebraska Zen Center. So I moved down with him and continued practicing. But it's quite lovely to come back home, isn't it? It's there's something always a little bit familiar and a little bit, I don't remember that. I do remember when Katagiri sat here and gave a Dharma talk, the Zenda was full like this. So there must be really good teachers here because so many people are coming. It's really beautiful to see. I was introduced as working with an olive branch, and the mediation part of my life and the Zen part of my life started the same week. To sit in meditation, to sit zazen, is to exactly experience, right at this moment, right for yourself, have the direct experience of non-separation from everything else. Now, if that happens, don't think that you are necessarily aware of that, because there's not a you in that experience itself, right? Because if you're not separate all of a sudden, there's not a you. If you have a you, then you have an other than you. So the experience of sitting zazen, the instructions for zazen, and can you hear me back there? Okay. So to sit zazen and have that direct experience of not a separate self, okay, that's shunyata, right? Not separate. Empty is a translation, but it's really empty of a separate nature. Empty of separateness. It's the experience of not me. In the instructions for zazen, then, you allow anything to arise. You have this beautiful upright posture. You put a lot of effort in posture in zazen, right? You're always sitting nice and upright. Everybody upright? Sit upright. We sit upright because we're supposed to be alive. We take this really wonderful, beautiful, upright posture. I did a lot of riding as a child, and so it's like the Queen of England sits on that beautiful thoroughbred mare that she has, and she sits very upright and very stable because that horse can move in any direction at any time. She's upright and there, and she's not fidgeting and she's not doing anything extra. She's just there. You see that in dancers? You see that in musicians? Whoa, there. 100%. So that beautiful upright posture, and then the instruction to allow anything to come up. We suppress nothing. Anything's allowed. So our senses are all open, right? We can hear the birds outside, notice the fans turning here, the floor beside us. We're totally aware. All the senses functioning. Completely alive. Clock ticking. No, it's a bird, isn't it? Tick, tick, tick. Oh, stop. It's a really good point because my mind hears that, there's a vibration here, and I assign it to something. And it's really a bird. It wasn't a clock. I made a mistake in there. And that's what we're doing all the time. When all it was a little vibration right here. So our senses are completely alive. We're really here right now. 100% engaged in just being here in this activity. This is pretty wonderful. I don't have to do something different. I don't have to be any different than I am. In fact, I can't be any different than I am right now. Isn't that interesting? All of history has brought all of us right to this place, and it's never happened before. So think of all of time. Time is made up by our minds, too. We're trying to organize it. But everything that's ever happened in the entire universe, whoosh, and here it is, right here and now. Boom. Never happened before. We bring whoever we are, all of our little foibles and all, whether we're a nice person or not such a nice person, whether we're an angry person or a smiley, happy person, or whatever we are, here it is, right now. This is what you get. This is what we have to work with right at this moment. But we have a vow, don't we? We have a vow that we're going to help all beings. So whatever this is, whatever this moment is, the vow, the intention for this moment is to be helpful. So what's helpful? How many of you drove here today? Lots of us, right? Now, our intention is to be helpful, right? And yet we've got in the cars. Our grandchildren are not thinking that's very helpful. We're not including everybody and everything and all time in that helpfulness. How can we be helpful? Right here and right now. How do we do that? So in the Diamond Sutra, it says to be helpful, then, to all beings, is to know that there are no beings to be helpful to. No separate beings to be helpful to. And thus, we're helpful to all beings. So, to penetrate right there in Zazen, this non-separateness, and notice what happens. We take a beautiful upright posture. We allow anything to arise. Goes the bird. Anything comes up. We allow it to arise and let it go. The effort, that little point that you say, oh, return to my breath, that letting go right at that moment is the direct experience of shunyata, of no gap between self and other. So every time you remember to go, oh, and come back and be with your breath again, you are experiencing directly for yourself. Shunyata, this empty of separateness. So I love it. First you get to be you, and then you get to be all beings. It's really quite lovely then. Right in our sitting, all the time. And that's what's happening. But you're not aware of it, right? You sort of have that gap in there, but it's like so short, you say, between, oh, that little, oh, and return to your breath when you give yourself that instruction. You give yourself that instruction. It's just this big, right? Except shunyata has no dimension. There is not time existing in that place. It includes everything that's ever happened and ever will happen. Time is made up. So we experience right there the entire universe. Being, literally being the entire universe. One body. And we return to our breath. Breath just coming and going, right? And very naturally something else happens, doesn't it? Something else comes up for us. Oh, good, I get to be me again. Motorcycle. Maybe it wasn't that. Maybe it was something else. It's not here. Oh, I'm sleepy. Oh, I'm tired. Oh, my knees hurt. Oh, this, oh, that. Just me, right? Well, that's pretty good. It's good to me because, you know, early on I was taught that you're never allowed to move in Zazen. Okay, so I'm sitting a practice period out in San Francisco, and they go, "Don't move!" And I'm a little farm girl, you know. I go, "Ooh, okay." But I've been a long-distance runner. You can actually run with a lot of pain. And so you go, "Ooh." And I got up and got my first knee surgery. So that meaning that comes up is trying to tell you something. To protect this body. To take care of this body, the fruit of many lives. So we don't want to forget this side, but we also have to include the other side. That's our practice. Oh, is this like way too cool for a Zen Buddhist priest to like turn on an iPad? I never use this, but you know, it's easier than trying to figure out how to go get something printed off. So I'm supposed to talk about right speech, right? When I came, I think it might have even been promoted. Was it promoted? Is it supposed to be right speech? Okay, but we have to base it on this experience, don't we? This sitting Zazen. If you're not doing that, you'll never get to it because it's the experience of sitting Zazen that gives you that right understanding. So right speech is part of the Eightfold Path. So how do we live our lives? So this is all about, you know, the first noble truth says life as a human being is characterized by suffering, right? And it comes from greed, anger, and delusion. The big one there is delusion. Delusion is always with greed and aversion or pushing away. Always has delusion associated with it too, right? The delusion. What's the delusion? Me, 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 me. Either I want what I don't have or I don't want what I do have, right? This is going on all the time. So then the third noble truth is you can end this, right? And then fourth, here's how you do it, okay? And that's the Eightfold Path. So, but let's make really sure those are four noble truths, right? Those four noble truths. The third noble truth doesn't get rid of the first noble truth, okay? A lot of people think, oh, the end of suffering means that number one just disappeared. Well, my experience around it, you end suffering, and just a moment later, here it comes again for you. Really fast. But then we have now experienced that once we learn how to end suffering, then when it comes back up for us again, oh, we can let it go, right? So exactly like Zazen, allow it to arise, and boom, oh, I can let it go again. So, and here's how we do it then. First of all, to have the right understanding. To understand as a human being, then, this activity that we're both a me and a no me. Huge, or huge me. A me that includes all beings in the universe, right? Everything that's ever happened in the universe. We include all of that. So the absolute side, the relative side, people have talked about it in lots of different ways. So you have to have this understanding, right? You have to have the word right... sama, that means skillful or helpful. I like helpful, right? Helpful understanding. Skillful understanding. Okay? So I'm going to include me when it needs to be, and I'm going to include absolute when it needs to be. But both the taking up either the relative side or the absolute side have some flaws. You're looking at it in a flawed way. So the trick, and in the Heart Sutra it says, gate, beyond, right? Go beyond. So beyond all inverted views, it says. So when you do the Heart Sutra, beyond all inverted views. All views are just pointers that are going on. So our activity then is to jump beyond picking up views. Okay? That's skillful understanding. Really important part of whatever's happening at this moment is to pick that one up. Who picks it up? That's that jump beyond. To not get caught into a particular view. to not know then, since this moment has never happened before. We don't know what to do. We're open. A beautiful open heart here. How do we do it? Remember our intention, though. How do we help all beings? Well, we're going to help them through pointing towards no separateness. Okay. So now let's take some of the action items that are going on. Thought, right? Speech, and actual physical activity. Okay. So how are we going to do that? So thought comes in two forms. Make sure my Abhidharma is quite a few years behind, so I studied it with no one, but I wanted to. The vitarka then is the arising of a thought. So in Zazen you have that a lot, right? Everybody experience that in Zazen? We have a thought. Boop, 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 here it comes. Okay. But the instruction in Katagiri here, it's really nice. He's a sweet little man. He always put it very, very kindly. He said, well, you know, it's like opening the front door, let the thought in, and open the back door, and let it out. And so he's talking about that the use of allowing any thoughts to arise, just like a sense organ. And in the Abhidharma, mind is a sense organ. So like the eye has contact, the ear has contact then going on, and we have eye consciousness or ear consciousness or in this mind consciousness. So poof, there goes a little thought. You're not trying to suppress those, right? You just allow yourself to experience this. But the instructions are, don't invite them to tea. And that's Katagiri again. And when I'm in the prison, it was pretty much got themselves all down to a bunch of people from South America. And so I'm listening to them translate because my Spanish is rotten. So the one guy was translating for me and he says, and, you know, let it go. You know, don't invite it for a cup of coffee. I said, you didn't translate correctly. We never drink tea. So whatever it is you drink, don't invite your thoughts to hang out. So that vitarka is the arising of it. And vichara is the when we start really chewing on everything. So you know that chewing on a thought and all worried about it, somebody's done something to you and you say, I'm doing, or the one, yeah, I'm building an apartment right now. So I'm sitting here and saying, oh, yeah, you know, I've got to go up to the store and get that. And what else do I need to get? And, you know, I start working that thought over all the time. How am I sounding back there? Okay. I get involved. Higher yet?
No.
Okay, good. Okay. So this continuing working on the thought, okay, we do that all the time. But just let it go. Right? As soon as you're aware of it, and you'll have that direct experience for yourself again, right there. Boop. Okay? Shunyata happens. I don't care whether it was a second ago or an hour ago. If you go, oh, and return to your breath, fantastic. You just completed the cycle. So to allow it to arise and let it pass. Okay. So that's right thought then. So allowing it to come and go, just like anything else. So now I think maybe I'm ready to take up right speech. Right, finally, this is good. I might be sort of like Katagiri. You know, Katagiri took, you know, I got up from a lot of talks and people would take it after a Katagiri talk. How many of you had actually heard Katagiri in the room? Okay, just three, four, five, six. Okay, just a few people. Good. So Katagiri would do a talk. And at the end, somebody would say, oh, that was a great talk on the Fourth Noble Truth. That was really nice. And then somebody else would say, Fourth Noble Truth? He didn't talk about the Fourth Noble Truth. He was talking about the precept of being helpful. So it's really, you know, pretty good. But I'm ready for right speech, right? My teacher told me I talk way too much. Okay, yeah. So right speech has to go back to that right understanding. Okay? Really important to it. And this moment has never happened before. Go back to that one, right? So we have to bring everything into this moment. And we can't know ahead of time. You can't figure it out what's going on and get all prepped and all ready and think that you can step into the next moment and be prepared for something that's never happened before. And yet that's what we do, isn't it? We get really trying to figure it all out, and then we'll go, now we'll talk to that person. And then you say one word and something changes. And all your sort of machinations have just dropped by the way. Because you just entered this moment. So this helpful speech, then, has to be based upon Zazen. And Zazen is that absolute, perfect, stable balance of that Queen of England sitting on her thoroughbred mare, or whatever image that you use of somebody who can be absolutely stable, when obviously the entire universe is changing. So this changing nature of the universe, you can't hold it. 1973, summer of 73, Spokane, Washington, World's Fair. And I'm up there. I've hitchhiked up to there. That's another story. Oof. We could hitchhike in those days, right? Some of the stories are really interesting about hitchhiking. But I get to the World's Fair, and that area had a lot of logging and everything else coming out of the mountains and down the rivers, and so they decided to have a demonstration of how to move logs down a river. And so there is a guy there giving a little spiel about it. He's got a bunch of logs, and he gets one spinning this way and one spinning this way and another going this way. Pretty soon he's got all these logs going all different directions. He's juggling like this while he's telling his story, you know, hopping back and forth on all the logs. This is pretty good, right? I don't know how you do this. And it's wonderful to see. Here's a perfect and absolute perfect balance with his world, right? He can just move beautifully. No matter what's happening, those logs are going up and down and splashing and going. He's just dancing. He's absolutely be able to be stable in a world that's just moving in all directions. So, of course, he stops and everything comes down and all the water goes and everything settles down. He says, anybody want to try it? So I get up there and he gets a log. And, you know, he holds it there for me and really steady. He says, okay, are you ready to go? I said, yeah. I'm in the water, right? I have no ability to be stable whatsoever. Boom, right off of there. Because I couldn't move in any direction that I needed to move. So stability, in order to create stability in this world, we can't create stability by the conditions of our life. You're never, ever, ever going to get your world organized in such a way that your world is perfectly peaceful and calm and nothing's wrong. And so if you can become a Zen Buddhist priest, then, oh, it's all perfect. That's not what we're up to, guys. What we're doing here is becoming stable in a world that's constantly changing. So we have to become that person who can stand on all those logs going up and down, twirling in all different directions, and juggling a whole bunch of different plates. That's stability. Not trying to rearrange your world. So how do you do that? So that's it, right? We sit here and we practice being stable with not so much going on. Right? Not too much is happening right here, right now. Can take a breath and just be here. This is pretty nice. You can take a breath at any moment of your life, no matter what the conditions are. So you can return at any time to that place. It's up to you. And that place then is that deep, quiet place that's available. It's really nice. It's quite beautiful to always know you can return to that. So Zazen, then, doesn't mean you can always stay in that place, because here comes something else coming around, and you go, oh, and you return. Again, and again, and again, and again. So no matter how difficult our lives are at the moment, we can take a breath and return. Pretty nice. That's stable. That's what our practice is about. Just keep practicing it. And I don't know, but I fall off the log a whole lot bunch. Okay? And I can try again, because I have a brand new moment to try it out in, right? Never happened before. I get another shot at it. Really fast, usually. How do we do that? I want to check my notes, because I want to see if there's anything else I want to say about right speech, right? Okay, I do. I have certain quotes, right? Okay. So from Ryokan, truth, if you cleave to it as truth, turns into falsehood. And falsehood, when you see it as such, becomes at once truth, right? So no holding on to it at all. No holding on to those fixed ideas. Somebody has to be this way. Well, that immediately then moves from truth into falsehood. Okay? I don't know how to run this thing. I had one more quote for you. Oh, yeah. Okay. So, when I first came in, I had to change all the rules for the organization, you know. I do a really... I'm always doing this. I said, well, I don't think I can give a Dharma talk without coming and doing a bow. And so... I want to just tell a little bit about that activity. When I went to Japan, Japan was really difficult. I didn't want to go to Japan. I wanted to study with Nonin, but if I wanted to study with Nonin, I had to go to Japan. Okay, I'm here. I'm doing this. I'm in Zuyoji, this really big monastery. It's got at least 40 monks, new monks there practicing, and a bunch of senior monks floating around. And so you're in this big Buddha hall, and I'm sort of in the back edge, and I see Ikkō Narasaki walk in. You know, he's about this big, and he's very old. And he comes in very, very stable and quiet, and walks up, and he offers incense, and he comes back, and he does a bow. And that man, who's probably been bowing now since he was a little kid, because he grew up in a temple, right? And he did a bow, and just how he did his bow was, I finally saw, now that's how you bow. Somebody's able to completely express themselves, okay? And this ties into that right speech piece of it. They're going to exactly express a bow. What is a bow? A bow is no me, no you. It's just 100% bowing. That was 1994, okay, when I first saw him bow. January 94. Okay. So every time I got there, I'd try and make sure I had a good view so I could watch this man bow. Because every single bow was brand new. Never, you could tell this man was doing a bow that he'd never done before. Really beautiful bow. Mm. I have a nice bow. My bow includes this knee that's had all this surgery going on to it, too. So I have a little different bow that's going on. But my intention there is, how do you express then no self and yet have me there too with my knee? Okay, I have to both things. I bring both there and then go beyond. Okay, so here's the quote for bow. No problem with you, keep losing. Bower and what is bowed to are empty by nature. The body of oneself and others are not two. I bow with all beings to attain liberation, to manifest the unsurpassed mind, and return to the boundless truth. So, that's a really nice one, okay? So, when you bow, you might want to look that up somewhere, a little bow in Gotham, and try just using that as you bow. And that's right speech, right at that point. Where just this action says everything you need to say. So if I had been a really good Zen teacher, I would have done my bow, and I would have said, thank you very much, and left. And I'm still working on it. Okay, so I'll take any questions if people would like. Thank you, because we do this together, right? Yeah.
Yes, I am asking for some advice.
Uh-oh.
I've heard so many times the idea of inviting a thought in but not attaching to it. And not often have I heard how to treat a thought that wasn't invited in the first mm-hmm. place and doesn't want to leave.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
There's my request.
So as soon as you remember, you go, oh, and return to your breath. You get to do that anytime you want. It's your choice. Right? You are in charge of that piece of it. I don't think we can necessarily control all the thoughts that arise, just like my ears aren't trying to control what's coming into them, right? So your thought, poof. Here it comes. It comes from who knows all the conditions of the world have manifested here. And here comes a little thought. I'm hungry. I'm sad. Wait till I get a hold of that person. Okay? And then you go, oh, okay. Not going to let it go. You're in charge of that piece anytime you want. Right? Yeah. We are in charge of that. The letting go one, we are.
It feels more like shutting out.
Well, that's why I wanted to make sure we let in anything, right? And so when I'm really having a hard time, then I check in physiologically and see, oh, I'm really upset with that person. And that's a story. What do I mean by upset? I mean upset, I've got this churning going on here. I've got tense through here. I have these charging thoughts going on with sense organy, right? So I have all that burning stuff coming up, right? Going on. So I check in physiologically. I don't want to suppress that. But then I can go, okay. I can return. So it's not suppression because I've experienced it.
Okay. That helps me. And here's how it has helped me. Maybe the thought doesn't leave. But I'm just going to ignore it. I'm going to say, okay, you're here, you don't want to leave. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Then you just have to stay with them. And then I'll just move on.
Yeah,
I
so some. Yeah. Stay there. And it will change. I guarantee you it will change. But you have a really good point. I don't want to suppress, so I go to the physiologic to see what's really going on right here and now physiologically with myself when I've got that really burning stuff going on. So. But I have found it's not particularly helpful to talk about other at that time. So he did this, she did this, you know, wait till I get to my boss and I'm going to give her a piece of my mind, you know, or how dare she do that, or that storytelling that goes, or I'm really worried about that big test I have, or that, the project I've got to get out the door, I'm really worried about that. Well, that worry, that uneasiness that's going on is, and that's exactly what's meant by dukkha, right? Okay, so dukkha's going to arise in us. First Noble Truth is alive and well. So here it comes, okay. Uneasiness has just shown up. It's that separation, that delusion that there's a self and another self that's coming up. And the ending of it is the return and coming, returning to this place. So we can do that at all times, any place, any time. But I don't want to suppress. 99% of the people that I talk to in one-on-one interviews, they're suppressing something they don't want to experience. So bring it on. This is what it is. Bring this moment on. Practice with it. Yes?
Two questions. How did you end up in Pittsburgh? How is a flatlander feel in the city of rivers, bridges, and hills?
Oh, yeah. I grew up in the city of bridges, rivers, and hills, out in the country, about 15 miles north of town was where I grew up on a little farm, And my dad worked in town, but I got to grow up with lots of animals and growing crops and everything else. Idyllic childhood. So at 17, I went west, and I was gone for 30 years. And then towards the end of my training with Nonan, if you can, you can never end your training, but at a particular point in my training with Nonan, shall I say, that my parents were asking me to come back to be helpful to them. And discussing that with Nonan, he said, okay, well, let's get a Zen Center started there. And it was said I was founding the Zen Center, but you're always supposed to go back a level. And since I didn't have Dharma transmission, it really is Nonan Center as the founder. And so you always go back one level when you, found, quote, found a temple. And, of course, we say Katagiri founded this temple. And, but really, who before that is founding the temple? All the people who are here. But the... That so that's how I came back. And the plains, I rented a house way down in the valley for a little while, and I was really lucky. We were trying to buy it and we couldn't buy it. And then a month later, this house on top of the hill came available with views in all directions, beautiful trees and hills, and just gorgeous. So I'm really fortunate. So I have my long views still. Trees and hills get in the way of the view, right? I agree completely. Yes.
This might be more of an extension of the question, okay. But we talked about a thought, you know, letting the thought in and then letting it out the door, and then talked about thoughts that come in that won't leave, and returning to our breathing. But I think there's another reality, at least for me, is a thought comes in and I know it's causing me pain, but at the same time, I'm not ready to let it go. And
so again,
I don't do that, but I do.
Check out what it is. Drop off the storyline. You know, the he said, she said, whatever, that little story, the uneasiness there. And go physiologically. That's my experience. Really experience. I would suggest that it's really, really nice to be, if you're going to be angry, sit zazen, because you can really be angry. The rules are you don't move, right? In zazen, here. Yeah. Now you get to be as angry as you'd like and you won't do any damage. So you can experience anger. You can ripping somebody's heart out, anger. You're so furious. And you can experience it here. Not, as long as you don't move off the seat. Okay? So that's what I mean by going physiologically to what's actually happening. So you don't have to suppress it. And so to really allow for it, but move off the storyline. Something else is going on from the story. The storyline doesn't get to it. And the word anger doesn't get at it. If I say the word hot, right, and I say, oh, touching a stove, it'll be really hot for you. But, you know, you don't know until you go, boom, nah, that's hot, right? Then you know what hot is, and beyond any kind of stove. So touch it directly. That's our experience in zazen, direct touch, the moment. Yes.
In my experience with certain... And it's from my own journaling where I've been able to see that maybe I have made progress even though I didn't feel like it.
Oh, no, you haven't made any progress at all because there's not a you going to go from here to there. You've never had this person, we have never done this before. We're co-creating something that's never happened before. Where's the progress going on? How do we do this? What?
Because when I felt restricted... with certain thoughts that it may restrict me, and I feel that I kind of just let them come in. Oh, that's interesting. I don't really know what to do with that now. But then I found maybe it's 2 or 3 years later something occurs, and then you know, I can come back to that, see the expanse. Ah,
we have the illusion of time, don't we? Yeah, the time's passing. We have that one, but. The person who experienced that 3 years ago is not the same person who's experiencing it at the present moment. Phew. We're not locked in. It's really good news, guys. We're not fixed and permanent. With this dynamic changing that's going on between all of us right at this moment, there's something happening here that'll never happen again. This dynamic interaction We're co-creating something with all of us, literally. Some of the training, there's a lot of people who point fingers at Japan, and if you hear that, they don't sit zazen, right? In Japan, the first thing canceled is morning zazen. We got a big ceremony. We got to go here, you know. So they formally come in, sit down, and then they go, you know, hit the bell, and we got to go get set up, you know. So I mean, the first thing canceled, you know. It's the heck with this zazen stuff. But they do it in a different way. With ceremony, they do this elaborate ceremonies going on, hours of ceremony, and you can take 40 or 50 people. And move in all the same directions. Now, as you're training, you're going to hear this going on all the time, people getting you to move in the right way, in all the right directions, and trying to get everybody to harmonize with each other. Until you see that instead of, you know, bouncing like this against each other, there's this beautiful mixing of all these different people. Everybody's exactly where they're supposed to be. They're harmonizing their voices, they're hitting the bells at the right moment, they're turning in the right directions, they bow the exact same way, they put their zagus down in such a way, they pick them up in such a way. It is the most beautiful expression of oneness that I've ever seen in my life. Bring one new person in, and it all has to change again. And everybody kind of shuffles around and gets that, and that new person gets a lot of finger snapping till they get pay attention. And so that finger snapping, the choreography of how to move in the zendo and a Buddha hall becomes this wonderful, beautiful dance where you have to be paying attention moment by moment by moment to your life. It's really lovely. It is zazen in action. It's zazen dancing. It's really a lovely, lovely experience, the training that's going on there. And you know what's really nice about it? It's preparing you to walk out the door and how you close the door. How you close the door today, you can tell. So I have a transmitted student, Jiseng Coghlan, and she did her monastic training at Shasta Abbey. And when she came back, I see her, you know, coming in, but I hear the door open. And it's different than when she left, how she opened that door. Why? Because she's used to carefully. Now, she was a dancer, so she's really very good at making sure this is all going on. But her time in a monastery with those other 50 or 60 monks there that she was practicing with, you know, how you turn the handle, how you close the door, how you take your shoes off, how you enter a room, everything is full of life, like you've never seen it before, never experienced before. That this is absolutely precious, this moment. You only get one shot at it. And that's what they teach in Japan. So, boy, did I wander all over that question, didn't I? Want any more on it? Okay, I do that. Yes?
Well, that leads me to my question was about, I heard you talk about that bug.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for a person. And then the bowing, and then the you know, checking in with your body in the process,
yeah,
feels like the same issue. And then now this,
yeah, every moment.
Yeah, and so my question is about my initial question was about, like, you know, I thought bowing was about respect.
Oh well, sure, why not? That's good enough. Respect is good. Respect means that there's no gap, right? Between you and me.
Oh.
Right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. No gap. Buddha to Buddha. One Buddha. We're co-creating a Buddha with a bow. That's respect, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Or we could use the word gratitude. I can't exist without you. Right? Yeah. Yeah. So any word we use doesn't quite get at it, right? But it is this... No gap, that we're co-creating something here that we can't do without the other. I can't do it without a floor underneath me, without air to breathe. I can't sit here without my chair. So all of it's co-creating this moment. And it's like really fragile, really precious.
And so do you think that, my second question is, do you think that, like the lawn mower guy, do you think that in his life, because he did that, that he was more in balance? Do you think it plays out in him?
I think all of us can fall off the log at any moment. I've known a lot of Zen teachers who have 10, 20, 30 years. And in fact, that's why we developed an olive branch. 30 years of Zen practice and they step off the log, you know?
So what we do physiologically doesn't necessarily help us.
No, it probably helps. I'm just saying that at any moment, causes and conditions can knock us off our balance. Don't expect not to be knocked off your balance. So we will always be knocked off our balance, constantly being balanced. And then, because it's the world is not stable, conditions will constantly change. And our practice is to find out where's that new point again. Yes.
I'm so sort of formulating my question, but it stuck to me when you mentioned about there being no you mm-hmm. and making progress mm-hmm. as an individual. And I guess I'm kind of wondering about goals, mm-hmm. working towards goals. That's a desire.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be an amazing fraud investigator, and I mm-hmm. want to be an amazing.
That's a great thing to do. That's from the sign of you. Go for it, girl. Be the best you can be. Yeah.
I think it's important to evaluate my progress in mm-hmm. relation to my goals
sure.
in order to maintain
mm-hmm.
motivated and make sure I'm staying on
mm-hmm.
progress.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you, what is the Buddhist way of reaching your goals without having you and without having desires?
So don't give up the you side, right? It's been what I'm trying to point out. This the relative side and moving from here to there, okay? And so Katagiri put it, there's plenty of room for improvement. Okay, it was a little expression you like to use, right? You're perfect just as you are, and there's plenty of room for improvement. So you include both sides. And so the point of, I'm going to college, I'll go there, and I'll get to this, Okay, you can do that, but you should giggle while you do it, okay? Because, you may or may not. You might want to go, oh, that way. And we'll change the way and direction we're going. Not that you should, but I think what you're considering doing, that sounds like a fantastic thing. I think it'll help all beings. Will it help all beings?
Yes.
Okay, so that's a good one. That's a good check-in, isn't it? Is this helpful? Okay. But no matter what that goal is, you're living right here and right in this activity of being the person who's studying. So you say, oh, I want a good grade on a test. But actually, you just are studying. What happens at the test, when you get to the test, then you're taking the test. Right? But the test is not now. Right now, let's just study, have a great time. This is really an amazing time to study and learn everything you can. I remember going into the library of the college I went to and down in the basement, and they had all these wonderful books, and I could learn so much about it. I could read and read and read and read. It was absolutely, fantastic. What a great thing. A great library is wonderful. So to be able to explore all kinds of ideas and thoughts, that's great. But that's right now. That's what I'm doing. Now I'm over here. But I could be in mind, maybe over that. Maybe that's a possibility. And so I'm going to keep that in mind. I'm moving towards that direction.
That really resounds to me. That's actually, I was talking to my boyfriend last night. I kind of see that he works too hard sometimes. He places a lot of pressure on himself
mm-hmm.
in working towards his goals. And I was kind of explaining that exact concept to him, mm-hmm. Enjoy what you're doing while you're doing it.
Exactly.
There's this quote that I really like. It's, the purpose of dance is not to get to a certain place in the dance floor, it's to enjoy each step along the way.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. There you go. Yeah. Then it's a beautiful dance.